Well, Australia is unfortunately a global leader when it comes to extinction, with 29 mammal species becoming extinct since the arrival of Europeans. That's a third of the world's total mammal extinctions in that time. Now scientists say a further 1,800 species are at risk of extinction from a range of threats. Martine Maron is a professor in the University of Queensland School of Earth and Environmental Sciences. We caught up earlier to talk first about the threats to endangered species in Australia.
There's such a huge number of reasons, but the big ones are habitat destruction, overextraction, particularly affecting fisheries, of course, and introduced species and diseases that have caused many extinctions, and particularly in Australia, I might add. Land clearing and introduced species are really the two big ones.
In Australia's case, how bad are things here?
It's pretty bad, unfortunately. Australia is sort of known as a world leader in extinctions. We have lost around about 50 mammals and birds just since European settlement. And we're not really pulling our weight in trying to achieve those global goals of stopping extinctions. We have about 1,800 species still threatened with extinction.
In terms of those species, can they be saved?
They can be, but it's a big job, and we need to do a lot more than we're doing now. We don't spend all that much on threatened species recovery at the moment in Australia compared to the size of the task. Ultimately, if we're going to actually turn around the trajectories of at least 1,800 species, and of course that's just the species we have enough data to be able to say how threatened they might be with extinction, we really do need to take things up a whole new level. We do need transformative change.
And everything is interconnected here, isn't it? Because when we talk about habitat loss, we're talking about land clearing, we're talking about soil degradation, we're talking about pollution, we're talking about introduced species, as you mentioned. Do we have a coherent strategy in this country across all of those areas?
Look, we don't, and, you know, arguably nobody really does. But the very thing that makes it such a complex problem, that interconnectedness of everything, is the same reason why we must solve it. We simply must, because all of those things and their interconnectedness is what creates our life support system. You know, we need biodiversity to support the clean water, clean air, productive soils that we rely upon. And I think that there are some things that we can be doing a lot better.
Such as?
We need to recognise the importance of supporting those who manage so much of our land. So our farmers can do an enormous amount and are doing an enormous amount, often on a simply voluntary basis, to manage biodiversity on their properties and improve the sustainability of their production systems. Traditional owners learning from Indigenous knowledge about how to manage the ecosystems. And also we need strong laws. We have a range of different instruments that we can use to protect really critically important habitats, threatened species, but we don't use them very well. Even the strongest sorts of regulations that we have for internationally important habitats like Ramsar sites are not a guarantee that we won't still lose some of those habitats.
On the other hand, it's very frequently the case that farmers will say, we need to be able to clear land. Green advocates are stopping us from growing food for this country. That kind of argument. There's a genuine tension there, isn't there?
Some of it's genuine, I know. Some of it is a little frustrating to encounter because I work with so many farmers who are able to bring together sustainable land management without land clearing and really productive systems. In fact, often more productive than their neighbours. I'm sitting here in Queensland at the moment, and out west I know of some marvellous property owners who retain threatened ecosystems on their property, and that actually reduces the evapotranspiration and the temperatures in the fields where they're growing the crops. And so they're actually getting better production from doing that.
Australia does have an Act of Parliament called the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Act. Does that act not do what the title says?
It's a very big job for a single act to do, and it would need to be extraordinarily well-resourced to achieve a goal like that. Unfortunately, the fact is that most development approvals that are assessed under the Act ultimately are approved, even if they do have important impacts on threatened species. So we had a look at a study of over 770 different proposals that were likely to impact on threatened species in Queensland, and only two actually didn't go ahead. It's a death of a thousand cuts. You can have all of these approvals with very strict conditions, but ultimately there's less habitat after each one goes ahead. And that's why we're seeing these ongoing increases in the numbers of threatened species, and that we're failing to recover many of our unique species here in Australia.
And does the same apply to urban areas, industrial areas, where of course you've got the pressure to not only create jobs and create places for people to live, a lot of concreting going on, but you've also got sort of remnant bits of bush and habitat. I mean, are we managing that any better?
Those last little remnants are so important, and there's not a lot of recognition of that. And one of the things that the focus on only threatened species does is we sometimes forget that the loss of a species from the entire planet permanently and forever, that is a terrible outcome. But my goodness, that's the very end point we should never get close to. We really need to be doing more to stop even getting there. And if you think about, for example, southeastern and far southwest Australia, where most people in Australia are living, most other bird species, for example, have lost most of their habitat from all of those areas. And so those little bits that remain are absolutely critical to maintaining biodiversity in and around the areas where people live, so that it can perform all those functions that we rely upon. And of course, people care about it. You only need to talk to people here in Brisbane about how they feel about koalas, for example, and they're at risk of disappearing entirely from southeast Queensland.
And that wasn't the case that long ago.
That's right. A lot of these changes have accelerated. And of course, on top of all of this, and I really should have mentioned this one earlier, is climate change. Mm. Ultimately, if we don't do something to turn that around, then there are going to be many, many more species extinctions.
And neither of us, I don't think, have gone through the whole report, but I know that it talks about soils as well. So can I ask you about soil? Because a lot of people think soil is dirt. It's the same thing. But we're losing species in soils as well. That's a living thing as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Soil is a living organism. The only thing that means that soil is not just, vermiculite into which we have to pour chemicals and mine unrenewable resources to put into it to make things grow is the fact that it is alive and we need to keep it alive. And if you think of what an enormous difference Australian soils must have had when we had our full contingent of digging and burrowing marsupials before they went extinct. They did an enormous amount to turn that soil over and to help the material and carbon break down into a form that's usable by plants. So we're losing our soil productive capacity while we're losing our species. And of course, that we don't even know what's happening to the many, many millions of microbial species that drive these soil processes.
Martine Maron, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Professor Martine Maron is from the University of Queensland School of Earth and Environmental Sciences.